Sports Pro Basketball Talk podcast. Brett Polakoff here with Kurt Heelan. What is going on, Kurt?
Not much. I'm trying to fill out my NCAA brackets, which by like noon on Thursday will be useless.
Yeah, completely destroyed by
by
noon, as usual, especially for us NBA guys who really don't have time
to
pay attention to college basketball during the regular season. We know Kentucky's good. We know a few players here and there who are going to be factors in the draft. Speaking of which, we have a nice conversation at the back end of this podcast with Ed Isaacson of Roto World and his NBA draft blog. But first, we'll get into some recent NBA news. So a little bit of a hot topic yesterday, last night, Denver Nuggets decided to rest some healthy players for a game against Memphis. Now, Denver, they've turned things around a little bit recently. Yes. They fired their head coach, Melvin Hunt, doing a fantastic job. They had won 6 out of 8, but then they go ahead and rest some players, rest Ty Lawson, rest Kenneth Faried, Danilo Gallinari against the Memphis Grizzlies. Predictably lost. It was a close game. You know, the guys that did play always play hard. You know, that's not what we talk about when we talk about tanking. We talk about the organization making decisions, you know, to basically handcuff, you know, the team, not make the best talent available so that they don't really have much of a chance. What do you make of this in Denver? You know, the tanking thing, obviously, the way the draft lottery is set up, you know, teams are sort of incentivized to lose to increase the odds, get some more ping pong balls. But is this really a smart move for a Nuggets organization that's trying to maybe put a little bit of a positive spin on what's gone down this season?
No, it's not. And this, by the way, didn't come from Hunt, and this didn't come from the GM. This came from over their heads,
right?
Which is, the Kroenke family. So it's which speaks to a lot of Denver's bigger issues. I mean, this goes back to the whole issue I have with them of what kind of team are they trying to build, first off, because they went and had this running system that worked really well with George Karl. Then they brought in, you know, Brian Shaw to be slowed down. Hey, we want to slow it down. We want to be defensive. Well, look, if you're going to do that, then you got to change the roster. You can't just plug the same guys in. It doesn't work that way. You know, certain guys, if you've got Kevin Durant, he'll be fine in any system. But a lot of their guys, especially Faried's the perfect example. He is a system. He's going to be great in certain systems. He brings a very specific skill set, but you've got to put him in those systems. And they weren't doing. He was struggling with Shaw. Now they're starting to win. Melvin Hunt knows how to use these guys. Melvin Hunt has, if not earned himself that job, earned himself an interview for that job. He has been phenomenal. The players really like him. Remember, he was an assistant there even before Shaw. He was an assistant under Karl. He was an assistant under Shaw. He knows these guys. He's got them. He's pushing the right buttons. He's putting them in the right positions. They're playing fantastically. So they're resting guys. This is just why would you blow the momentum? Like, your draft pick at this point isn't going to make or break you. You're not going to get dramatically better odds here. You're just accept it and move on. But I feel like they got caught up in the tanking thing a little bit, like you said.
Yeah. And, you mentioned the players not fitting the system. You know, this is what we see with the Sacramento Kings this season, right? They blow out a head coach who's doing a good job. They're playing at a slower pace, you know, more of a half court, you know, type of offense. Ownership decides, hey, no, we want to push the tempo. Well, how's that working out for you? So now you're, you know, second or third in pace since George Karl came aboard, but you're the worst team in the league defensively. So, you know, what do you want to do? The players that you have aren't going to be a fit for that super fast up-tempo system, at least not on the defensive end of the floor. And, you know, you're seeing what a disaster it is. You know, the Nuggets organization just has not been making smart decisions. You know, they blew out George Karl after a big, you know, 50-plus win season.
57 wins that year.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, so they lose in the first round of the playoffs. But, you know, basically he wasn't listening to management. He didn't want to develop guys like, you know, JaVale McGee, who was there at the time. You know, he wanted to play his best players and win. You know, and now we're kind of seeing the opposite right now. So, I don't think the Nuggets have any idea what they want to do at this point.
No, and that was, I mean, remember, they lost in the first round of those playoffs because Gallinari blew out his knee about a week before the playoffs.
Exactly.
They were the team nobody wanted to face, and then they lost their leading scorer and floor spacer, and, you know, that was enough to do them in, as it would be most teams in the playoffs. I've had this conversation on, you know, with people in Denver, and the feeling there is, man, just pick a system and stick with it. And Sacramento's the same thing. This, all the talk about what DeMarcus Cousins was complaining about in how unhappy he was with his agent, or, you know, his agents are complaining. What his agents really went and said is, just pick something and stick with it. Like, I don't, you know, I can play for Jordan. DeMarcus Cousins is one of those guys. He'll be good in George Karl's system. He'll be good in just about any system. Just stick with it and let it grow. And then put the right guys in it.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do this offseason, you know, in terms of hiring another head coach. You know, is Melvin Hunt going to be the guy? He's been within the organization for a little bit. And he's shown in this brief stretch that he has the chops, you know, to make things work. You know, his comments were hilarious.
Yes, his comments were great. That the his comments was that they were resting guys because the owner's dog tore his ACL.
Yeah, basically explaining like just how injury stricken the team was last season. You know, just sort of exaggerated. So his comments were great. He's towing the company line. Be interesting to see if he gets a shot. All right, let's talk about the Cleveland Cavaliers a little bit. They got blown out in Miami, as you mentioned. Dwayne Wade hit the hot tub time machine. With a monster performance. You look at the Cavaliers, you know, they've been on a tear, you know, since right before the All-Star break. They've just been on a monster run. After the game, David Blatt said, hey, you know, we want to finish strong. We got to finish in second place. LeBron James, not so much. He's not really into the whole playoff seeding thing. You know, his quote was, you know, wherever at the end of the season we land, I'm ready. Just get me in the playoffs. You know, I feel like I can win on anybody's floor. LeBron seems to be wanting to prioritize health and chemistry. Not sure his head coach, you know, necessarily disagrees, but he definitely wants to finish as strongly as possible. Is this a rift between LeBron and David Blatt, or are these guys just kind of coming at things from a little bit of a different perspective?
Yeah, a little. I think more of the latter. I think they're fine. Look, I don't know that they've ever been completely on the same page at all this season, so I don't know that this is any different, but hey, every coach wants to win, and they want – hey, the two seed means you're at home for the first two rounds at least. And let's be honest, in the East, you're home for the first two rounds, and they face Atlanta. This is going to be Cleveland – barring an injury or something, you know, it's Cleveland and Atlanta. Those are clearly the two best teams in the East. I get wanting to be home for those, but he's right. LeBron, I think, is right in this sense. Like, he's talked about getting some rest. He wants some time off down the stretch. Some of the other veterans have got to get some time off down the stretch. It wouldn't even hurt to rest Kyrie. They're resting Love. I don't know that that hurts them much. But, you know, get some of these guys a little blow. And you get that two seed, and that means you're going to get – well, Indiana's no longer a complete pushover, but you're going to get a very winnable series in that first round. Maybe you get Charlotte, you get Boston in there if you're lucky. And, hey, you know, it's not too hard to get through. So I get that. I don't think it's that big a deal for them, but man, I'm not completely sold on them yet. I still think, I really believe Atlanta can get them this year. This is the year you can get the Cavs. By next year, they're probably just going to be too big a beast. But I think this year you can beat them. And the Hawks did it a couple weeks ago, just flattened them on a Friday night game.
Yeah, I think Cleveland is beatable in the playoffs this year. I don't know if it'll happen in the Eastern Conference Finals, or if it won't happen until the NBA Finals, but it's kind of like what we saw LeBron's first season in Miami. As the team is coming together, trying to figure things out, you know, that's when you can get them. Once they've had a season or two to gel, becomes much more difficult. And look, you know, you look at what David Blatt said after the game. It was after a loss in Miami. You saw, you know, Mario Chalmers, who was always sort of the little brother on that Heat team, getting yelled at, you know, publicly on the court by LeBron and Wade. And you saw Dwayne Wade, you know, step up and go off. You know, he probably wants to avoid, you know, having to go to Miami, you know, in the playoffs. You know, there's a lot that's still going to happen at the bottom of that conference, but you don't want that weird rivalry thing with the Miami Heat, you know, to deal with in the first round. It's just not something you'd rather avoid it if possible. So that could be where he's coming from. You know, I'm not so sure.
Yeah, exactly. And I think he would love to get the team that's happy to be there at the bottom. If Boston makes it, and the way they're playing, they very well might, you'd be like, they'd be just so overjoyed to be in the playoffs that you're like, hey, that's the first round matchup I want. If you get, like you said, if Cleveland gets Miami, Miami's just not going to be in with all those guys, frankly, anyway. They're not just going to be happy to be there. They've been to the finals four straight years. Indiana's kind of the same way. I don't think that's a team that's, despite their comeback, they're not going to be, like, just satisfied and roll over. Not that either of those teams can beat the top at the West, but East, but you'd like that series to be as easy as possible if you're the one or two seed.
Yeah, you know, you look at teams like Boston or Charlotte. I mean, they're you know, not going to be able to hang, you know, with either Atlanta or Cleveland in a seven-game series. So would be much less interesting, for sure, for Cleveland, and that's exactly how they like it. Let's look at the West real quick. you know, it's just kind of a cluster once you get past the, you know, even the two seed, you know. I mean, Memphis has been sliding a little bit lately. You got Memphis, Portland, Houston, Dallas, San Antonio, and the Clippers, you know, six or seven of the eight teams that are going to make the playoffs are pretty much all bunched up, which makes forecasting matchups in the West, you know, virtually impossible.
Yeah, it's actually, and you're seeing teams go up and down. You know, San Antonio got hot. They kind of move up. Dallas was, you know, I said to a few people a week ago, like, who's the weakest team in the West right now? Well, it's probably Dallas. Well, Dallas just beat the Clippers and then won again last night. I mean, they've had two quality wins in a row. This is the problem with the West. It's really going to be like who's healthy, who's hot, and then who gets the matchup, because there really is a lot of rock, paper, scissors going on where we can beat these guys, but we struggle a little bit against these guys. I don't know. After watching Sunday, though, I don't know if I could tolerate a whole series of Houston and the Clippers.
Yeah, that would not be aesthetically pleasing.
But actually,
you could kind of say that about the Clippers against anybody, right? I mean, they're kind of chippy with every team. Teams don't like playing against the Clippers. We saw Matt Barnes, you know, tackle James Harden on that play. How he wasn't ejected, you know, is beyond me, especially, you know, with his long history of making plays like that. But you look at him, you know, Blake Griffin, it's a foul fest with him down in the post. He's a handful. And, you know, Chris Paul is one of the game's, you know, most fiery competitors. You know, just nobody likes playing against this Clippers team. So, you know, you could see it get chippy with anybody, with Memphis, with Oklahoma City, with Houston. I think, you know, the Clippers, you know, while their bench is a disaster, I think they're going to be a very tough out just because of that, you know, physical style that they play.
I picked the Clippers before the season, and I don't think their bench has come through, although they've gotten some. Doc Rivers has tapped into the old Donkey and Shrek bit with Nate Robinson and Big Baby Davis.
Yeah.
for a little boost. Their bench has been a little better lately, which they've needed because Crawford missed some time. But yeah, I'm not sold that they're playing good enough, consistently enough, and with all due respect, how good Doc Rivers thinks DeAndre Jordan is, their defense hasn't been where it needs to be. That said, that's a team that on paper they could get hot and suddenly you're there. I think Portland. I've been saying Portland's my dark horse, and then I kind of got off that when Wes Matthews got hurt. Now I'm not sure where I want to be off that. I that's another team that's got. Aflalo stepped up. Some guys off their bench have stepped up, and they are, you know, look, LaMarcus Aldridge is a matchup nightmare, and you know, Robin Lopez in the middle scares mascots across the league. So I just think that they're tough out. Too. There's just no easy out. It's just that is such a bloodbath, and I think being healthy and just avoiding the bad matchup is going to be so key out west.
Yeah, I mean, I could see. You know, the only team that I'm really sold on 100% is Golden State. You know, and I think anybody else, you know, even the Spurs, even Memphis, who's been good most of the season, if they were to lose in the first round, it's not going to be a huge surprise just because of how high the overall level of competition is in that conference.
Yeah. The other team I'm sold on, if, and that's a massive if they're healthy, is Oklahoma City.
That's a massive if.
Yeah. If the Ibaka thing really hurts them, because I think they get Durant back in the next week or two and he'll be fine for the playoffs. But Ibaka is so key to what they do defensively. But if they got all those guys really healthy and going for the playoffs, that team to me has got both the experience and they did a – Waiters is fitting better in there. That just DJ Augustine was a great pickup. I love the moves they made for depth.
I really just don't think that there's any way they beat Golden State in the first round. And you look at the standings, Oklahoma City's in at 8 right now, and they're 5 games behind the 7th spot. There's no way they make up those 5 games with, you know, 15 games left. And I just don't think there's any way a cobbled together Thunder team with Durant coming back, you know, Westbrook's going to have to dial it back a little bit. You know, Ibaka, maybe not. We don't know what's going on with him. I just don't see it. There's no way they beat Golden State 4 times out of 7 games.
I don't know. How healthy is Bogut is always the key for me for Golden State.
Sure.
I'd pick Golden State, but I think that's a really, again, that's about the toughest 1-8 you will ever find. That's a really rough series. But, yeah, I mean, I'd pick Golden State, and I'd probably have Golden State as my favorite to come out of the West, but if you made me pick the field or Golden State, I'd still pick the field.
Yeah, because there are, you know, who knows what can happen, right? There's a lot of tough teams, you know, Portland, you know, Portland, San Antonio to me are kind of the ones, you know, the Clippers maybe for a round. I just think the cohesiveness, you know, Golden State has had guys healthy basically all season long, you know, stellar on defense, top of the league, and, you know, or right there with the Clippers in terms of offense. You know, they're just too together. You know, they've been playing that consistent level of basketball where the Thunder have been up and down, guys in and out of the lineup, you know, midseason trades to shake up the roster. I think it's too much to overcome against what's been a ridiculously good Golden State team.
And by the way, we're handing like Oklahoma City has got this and they're in.
Right.
You know, our friends in New Orleans would like to differ. And frankly, especially with Ibaka out now, they have very similar schedules. It's a slightly easier schedule for the Thunder, but not way easier. And the way that Anthony Davis and everything is playing, I'm not ruling out New Orleans.
Yeah, you know, we're giving Oklahoma City basically the eighth seed, and there's no guarantee at all, you know, that they make it. They're a half game up on the Pelicans, you know, again, with 15 games to go. They've played, that half game is in the win column for the Thunder. So either way, whether Oklahoma City makes it or they don't, the playoffs in the West are going to be, you know, ridiculously interesting.
Yeah, very much so. It really is going to be just a bloodbath. There's just going to be just some really good teams are going to, like you said, I mean, very good teams are going to be gone in the first round.
All right, good stuff as always. As we mentioned at the top, we've got some NBA draft talk for you here. Give you a little bit of a look at who you might want to watch as you're checking out the tournament games later this week.
All right, we're fortunate to have with us on the PBT podcast one of the guys to follow if you're keeping track of the NBA draft, from NBA Draft Blog, Ed Isaacson. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, Kurt, how are you?
I'm doing well. We got to start here because I think there almost needs to be a disclaimer in a sense, is because we, like a lot of fans, and myself included, I probably see more of some of these guys who are going to get drafted around the NCAA tournament, and we form opinions based on what we see here. But for an NBA scout or someone like yourself, your opinion on a player is largely formed by this point. I mean, what are you looking to get out of a tournament game?
The tournament is just, you know, for a lot of the players, it's sort of a culmination, especially with the younger players, of, you know, where they were, you know, say in November. You know, a lot of things you notice when they first start playing, and a lot of it will be keys that they, you know, of how they will be as pro players. You want to see how a lot of them have come along. Of course, in many cases, the competition is going to be a lot tougher for a lot of these teams in the NCAA tournament. And there's the pressure factor of, you know, sort of a one and done, you know, scenario that a lot of these guys are going to see, you know, for the first time. You know, how are they going to react? Are they able to step up at the right time? And, you know, none of it is definitive in any way, but it's all just, you know, more information. And at the end of the day, that's what, you know, all scouting comes down to, is just gathering as much information as you can about a guy and then making, you know, determining your opinion.
Cool. Well, let's start with the roughly 300 guys that are draftable out of Kentucky this year. There's Towns is obviously the big guy. He's probably going to go first or second. I guess, would you say first or second? It's probably Okafor than him?
No, I really think it's going to come down to who gets that pick. But, you know, I think both are, you know, it's a 50-50 case right now for either one, and I don't think many teams would be faulted for going in either direction.
What does Towns bring to the table? Let's talk a little bit about him. I mean, he is a big guy, and he is athletic.
Well, yeah, I mean, those are the two things right away that are going to stand out. You know, at near 7 foot, you know, he has, he's wide, he has good size to his body, and, you know, and he can move. A lot of ways he moves like a wing, when he gets the ball in his hands. And he's skilled. I mean, he's a very skilled player, especially on the offensive end. When he gets the ball, you know, he has a lot of options. You know, he can back you down, he can face you up. There's always been this talk about, you know, Karl Towns, the perimeter shooter, going back to his high school days. And you can sort of see that the tools are there, though he's never really, he hasn't really had a chance to show it at Kentucky. So I wouldn't really bank on it. But I mean, everything is there. And then yeah, on defense, you know, he's a very good post defender. You know, I think, you know, he does block shots well, but I think his numbers are sort of inflated a bit, just because of the Kentucky system of always having two bigs out there. He sort of just gets to wait around the basket and, you know, wait for someone to try and drive into the lane and swat their shot, which differs from, you know, someone like Cauley Stein, who gets out there on the perimeter and guards. But overall, you know, for a 19-year-old, you know, Carl Towns is, you know, as good a big man defender as we've seen in a couple of years.
And I IM'd you or direct messaged you on Twitter or whatever it was earlier in the year, because I had been watching the Kentucky game, and I came away really liking Cauley Stein. Like, I as a big man, I don't know that he's a future NBA star, but that is an athletic guy who can do a lot for you defensively right off the bat, it seems.
Well, that there is, and, you know, he does a lot of things well. You know, some things are sort of concerning about him, and I raised these to you. You know, this isn't a freshman. You know, this isn't a 19-year-old kid. He's a junior now at Kentucky. And you sort of expected him to come along a lot more and be a lot more dominant, you know, than he has been. I mean, he has flashes where he's just, you know, spectacular. And it all revolves around his length and athletic ability. In terms of skill, he's still not the most skilled basketball player you're going to find. And there's also concerns about, you know, just sort of his size. He's big and he's quick, but he's lean. Yeah. And he's not really a great rebounder for his size. So you're going to, you know, if you're going to have him on the floor at the NBA level, there's going to be some trade-offs that you're going to have to work around. But in terms of just a raw, long, athletic big guy, you know, it doesn't get better than him in this draft.
And you've got the third big guy from there, Lyles, who, you know, Trey Lyles. Where does he fit in? Obviously, he's another freshman. He's another young guy.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy who, you know, he battled some injuries during the year, was out for a bit. You know, it's going to be a tough decision for him whether to, you know, to enter this draft or not. You know, he's another guy, we're talking, you know, 6'10", with sort of a close to a classic power forward body. But he's more comfortable operating on the perimeter. You know, so you're looking at someone with a power forward body who can operate as a stretch four. But again, you know, he missed time this year, and he's still, you know, he's still raw in a lot of ways, especially in sort of understanding the game, especially on defense, of, you know, of where he fits in, what he should be doing, you know, and just sort of the basics of how to guard. You know, that's a thing that happens with a lot of the non-Kentucky bigs when they're going to come into the league, is, you know, they're always used to having that security blanket behind them. So a lot of them, it takes a while for them to sort of acclimate, you know, to the speed and, you know, the strength of what they're going to, you know, encounter at the next level. But Lyles, you know, best case, he'll come back for his next year. Because I think he can go a lot higher than he probably would in this draft. But, you know, overall, we're still looking at a guy who's probably going to go in the first round either way.
And then the other guy in the first round out of there is probably Devin Booker, the shooting guard. A very skilled player, but doesn't really blow you away with his athleticism.
No, I mean, he's one of these guys, you know, yeah, he's not a great, I mean, he's probably a better athlete than I think, you know, people give him credit for. He's a very good defender, especially out on the perimeter. He can contain, you know, some people, you know, we're getting to this phase now with the draft where people love to focus on the length of defenders' arms. And Booker is not very long, but he's skilled, you know, on defense. And, you know, he holds his own. Yeah, I mean, he's not going to get a lot of deflections and a lot of steals, but he's going to be able to contain. And, you know, in a lot of ways, that's as important. But, I mean, the key, you know, what makes Booker so attractive is the guy can shoot. You know, there are very few shooters like him in this draft. And, you know, whether it's off the dribble, whether it's off, you know, off the catch, coming off the screens, you know, he's as confident in the shooter as you're going to see in this group.
And, I'm one of those guys who's like, drafting the best shooter is never a bad call. It's just, those are the kind of guys that are good to have around. Well, let's switch over a little bit to Duke. I saw Okafor back at Adidas Nations back in the day, you know, while he was still in high school. I've been impressed. He seems to have gotten a little leaner and really worked on his physical side over the last couple years.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's definitely worked on his body. You know, he still has to take it to one more step. You know, he lost a lot of the baby fat he had, you know, and now it's time to turn what he has left into muscle. But, yeah, he's definitely moving a lot better than he has. You know, I can't remember. I mean, we may have to go back to someone like, you know, Tim Duncan to see someone with just the pure, you know, back to the basket post game that Okafor has. He's ready for basically whoever ends up picking him, that he'll come in and he'll do well right away. You know, as a scorer in the post. The reason Towns is sort of in the mix now, you know, for the top spot is Okafor has his issues too. He's not a great defender, but he's probably better than I think a lot of, you know, the hyperbole that goes on about him is. I don't think the gap is as huge as a lot of people want to make it to be between Towns and Okafor. What Okafor is really missing is sort of that mean streak. It comes out once in a while, but on defense, you know, he really has to learn to be a battler. You know, whether it's defending on the block or going after rebounds, he sort of needs to get that mentality where, you know, it's his ball and he has to stop it and go after it, you know, every possible opportunity. Especially, you know, when you're looking at, you know, what someone like Gobert has done, you know, over the last, like, 2 months, or Nurkic, in his time, you know, the young guys coming in, the thing that's sort of separating them right now is, you know, they're aggressive and, you know, they're at every opportunity, they're looking, you know, to make a play.
Yeah, definitely. And I'll tell you, it was interesting because I saw the more baby fat at Okafor back in the day, and Ralph Sampson was his coach. And I'm like, well, this is a really polished, really, he's got so many skills below the basket. It was Al Jefferson-esque. And Sampson's response was, he can play above the rim. He just hasn't figured out he can play above the rim yet. And he looks much more like he's figuring that out now.
Yeah, that's going to dazzle you right away is the footwork.
Yeah.
You know, for someone his size, you know, to drop step to the baseline and almost tiptoe it, around his defender, is something you know you're rarely going to see, you know, from someone like him, and it comes so naturally, and that's the thing that, you know, is so impressive about him.
Yeah, Duke is loaded too. They've got some other guys, you know, Justice Winslow is kind of the other guy getting a lot of attention there. What does he bring to the table? I mean, you're talking about a three. Is he kind of a classic NBA wing?
In a lot of ways, especially on the defensive end, you know, he's a guy who will adjust quickly to this, you know, to sort of the speed and strength of next level guys. He has an NBA body already. You know, a lot of what he needs to work on is sort of, you know, polishing at this point. You know, and then the other thing is, you know, you mentioned, you know, you need to have shooter. He's not the most reliable shooter in the world. But when he gets in that mindset that he wants to attack the basket, you know, there's not many people who are going to try and stop him. You know, he finds a way. He's a good ball handler, you know, for his size. And, you know, he's one of those guys who just knows the game well. As opposed to, you know, we were talking about a couple of the Kentucky guys, like Lyles, who need to learn it. Winslow knows it. He just needs to put it all together if he wants to really make an impact at the next level. Right now, it's just sort of a mismatch of, you know, athletic ability, skill, aggressiveness, Once he puts it all together, he can be very good. It's just a case of whether he actually does.
All right, so who's the best senior in this draft? Is it Frank Kaminsky out of Wisconsin or Grant out of Notre Dame? Or is it somebody else that I forgot about?
It's definitely one of those two. And it's a tough one. I could see Kaminsky, to me, is the better and more polished player right now. So I could see Grant being more successful at the NBA level.
What kind of point guard is Grant?
That's the thing, is you're not really sure. the Notre Dame offense runs through him. And, you know, after sort of, you know, when he had to leave Notre Dame last year, he definitely came back with a different mindset of becoming more aggressive, especially, you know, he's done very well in pick and roll situations, especially finding guys. Though it helps a lot when you have the shooters that Notre Dame has on the perimeter. You know, there's not going to be very many bad reads you can make. You know, the problem with Grant is, you know, there's still a lot of that dribbling around, trying to wait for to make something happen, which you see more in younger point guards. And, you know, the thing that that sort of separates Grant from a lot, though, is you can move him over to the two. He's a very good perimeter shooter. He can attack from the wing. You know, so you really can't go wrong either way with him. You know, the problem is he doesn't have a lot of those sort of natural point guard skills that you're looking for in, say, you know, someone that with similar size like a Carter Williams, who, you know, for all his sort of troubles at the NBA on the offensive end, he sees the floor and can still pass as well as a lot of guys.
All right, the one guy near the top we haven't talked about yet is D'Angelo Russell out of Ohio State. Is he really a one or a two? What is he going to be at the NBA level, or is he one of the hybrids, more Westbrookian?
He's definitely more Westbrookian. I'm not as high on Russell as a lot of people seem to be. The rise is sort of, the rise of his, the attention he's getting is sort of outmatched, what he's done. A couple of days ago on Twitter, I just sort of, because something I had noticed while watching him play is, a lot of teams have found ways to be successful in stopping him, in pretty much all aspects, whether it's distributing the ball or getting, or scoring. And sort of the breakdowns between his games against, the top 50 or top 60 college defenses and those against everyone else, I mean, it was a huge discrepancy, and the numbers against his 12 or 13 games against the top 60. I mean, we're talking about a guy who was shooting like 36-37%, even less from three. Was getting his assists, but was also turning over the ball a lot more. If this is one of those cases where it's a guy who has put up some spectacular numbers, but he's sort of padding it a lot. In a lot of ways, against teams where he's having a much easier time. The good thing is, in a big spot, he wants the ball. If the game is on the line, he's going to take the shot, and that's where sort of that Westbrookian attitude comes in. Is he's always looking to make something happen, and there are goods and bads to that. And it took Westbrook a while to sort of get to that. And he still has a bit of trouble, at times.
Yeah.
You'll see the complaints, even when he puts up the numbers that he does, that, there are some things that just aren't, very good to look at. And Russell is going to need to do a lot of figuring out like that. Plus the normal things for, an 18, 19-year-old kid. He has to get stronger. He's not really the quickest guy. He relies more on finesse. He's going to end up probably being drafted very high in this draft, but I think the expectations of what people will have will need to be tempered a bit.
All right, so before we let you go, who are some of the guys, either from smaller colleges or guys we haven't talked about, who you think people should keep an eye on, guys who could make an impact at the next level that we could see through the tournament?
There's going to be a few guys like, you know, if you had a chance to see Arkansas, and not many have unless they've played Kentucky, Bobby Portis is, you know, I mean, he's a known name. I mean, the guy was a McDonald's All-American, but, you know, the last couple of years at Arkansas, I mean, he's really worked on his game. And, you know, going up against Towns a couple of weeks ago, he gave him a real tough time. So I think, you know, he's a guy right now who's being, you know, very underrated for what he can be able to step in and do right away. Another guy is Christian Wood from UNLV, who broke out sort of earlier this season. You know, we're talking about a long skilled, you know, another long skilled four, you know, can probably even play the three at times, who, you know, he went through a lull sort of in the midseason. But, you know, you can see that he sort of put together, you know, he's starting to put together all of these, you know, all of these things, you know, his ability to shoot, his ability to get to the rim, to get on the offensive boards. You know, he has to get stronger and learn to defend better. But he's a guy I can actually see coming out because I don't think another year at UNLV is going to help him. So, I mean, he's definitely a guy to keep his eye on, especially when we get to the workout stage where he's going to be going one-on-one against some of these other guys. I think he's going to do very well in that sort of situation.
Oh, cool. And I feel like the last guy I'm going to ask about, only because my ultimate boss played there at Providence, Chris Dunn from Providence. got to make the boss happy. But he's like, you know, he's a guy who strikes me as somebody who can be a rotation point guard at the NBA level, somebody you could lean on.
Well, yeah, and this is where I think I differ with the way a lot of people are starting to see him right now, is I think Chris Dunn would be a fantastic backup point guard at the NBA level, or even some, you know, even a third option in a three guard rotation. But you know, one, I mean, there are a couple of things to watch out for here. One, this is his only, you know, his only college year where he's been healthy, and he still has shoulder issues. And, you know, and he's playing through it. But I think, I think this is a guy where every time he hits the floor, you know, you're going to get worried.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of vision and his passing ability, I mean, he's fantastic. But I think the Providence system also helps him a lot, especially numbers wise, though it hurts him. You know, he plays at a very fast pace. You know, he turns the ball over a lot. You know, I mean, very rarely are you going to be talking about, you know, first round NBA level point guards who are averaging four turnovers a game, unless they're, you know, a main offensive option. You know, I think Elfrid Payton last year, who is a guy that I think you're going to see a lot more comparisons to, both, you know, the sort of the late rise, and the body type. But, you know, Payton was a much better offensive option, even with the broken shot. No one was stopping getting him to the rim. You know, Payton, I mean, Dunn, you know, he flourishes in transition. You get him in the open floor, he's fantastic. In the half court, yeah, you know, he does some good things. He does a lot of bad things. And, you know, again, he's improved his shooting. But, I mean, we're still totally talking about, you know, maybe a 33% college three-point shooter. You know, so there's still a lot of work for him to do there. You know, so he's a guy, I think, you may see a lot of people, you know, start to, you know, have him show up in the top 20. You know, I would worry about something like that. But at the end, yeah, if you're going to take the guy in the late first round and, you know, be, you know, rely on him for 15, 20 minutes a game, I think you'll end up with, you know, with something great.
Yeah, I think he can work out that way. By the way, the other thing Payton had going for him is just way better hair. So.
And Payton is a much, much better defender. And it's good to see he's sort of adjusting now at the NBA level. He's getting to show a little bit more.
Yeah. They're really high on him. They're going to spend a lot of, I heard that they're going to spend a lot of time working on his shot again this summer. If they can get that just a decent, Payton becomes far more valuable. So,
yeah, and the thing is, I mean, I've seen him do it. I've seen him work on it, and I've seen him, you know, show it. I'm sure if you go to a practice, yeah, he does it. There's something right now in his head that in the game, he just reverts back. You know, the same happened with Marcus Smart, and I think it's something you're going to see with a lot of you know, young guards as they come into the league. It's sort of that game repetition when you've only played, you know, 30 to 60 college games in a career. You know, your game, you know, the amount of game time you've spent just isn't there yet. You know, so there's going to have to be some allowances made. It's just a matter of getting them into the right NBA system that's going to be able to work with them. You know, the talent now, there's more talent than there's ever been. And a lot of these, that's the problem for a lot of these guys who choose to come out early, is I don't think the patience is going to be there unless, you know, said you're a physical freak, like someone like Gobert, any of the long big guys. You know, if you're a point guard, a wing, you know, it's not going to be as forgiving anymore.
No, it's definitely not. And like you said, that there are options that they can always go land, and out of the D League too. There's so many places to pull good guys from. Ed, thanks for the time. We are going to do this again as we move closer to the NBA draft, and you'll be reading and hearing a lot from Ed on Pro Basketball Talk. Thanks again for joining us.
Always great talking to you, Kurt.